I was at the car dealership on Monday checking for a couple of minor issues. My brand new Subaru wouldn't start all the time and click, click, click and act up, and then the battery would go dead and then it would start again. And the, you know, you can telltale sign on a electronics of your car, the clock just had to be reset about every third day. And I said, there's something wrong. He said, it's a brand new car. It doesn't have 1,000 miles on it. It can't have anything wrong. So we took it in Monday, even though I was sick and fighting this infection in my leg. And about an hour later, the service manager came up to me and said, Bob, it's going to be a little bit longer. We're having trouble diagnosing what the problem is. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, it's because we can't get it started. It's out in the parking lot yet, and they ended up having to work on it right out there in the Monday morning to get it into the shop to get to realize that the batteries from Subaru were all defective that came on that batch of cars. And so a couple hours later, I was able to get out of there and get home and get the medicine beginning and the things that were needed. You remember last Sunday we were fighting the swelling and the problems in the leg, and I was frustrated and discouraged because, you know, a new car should be workable, right? It shouldn't have issues like that. But I was happy to get out, and I thought, Lord, what else can go wrong? I got a bad leg. I'm in misery. I'm in pain. What more, and a car won't work, what more can I have? And so rather than going to a whole organ recital, it was not a good day on Monday and the subsequent days of misery. But, you know, troubles, conflicts, challenges, trials, tests with our family, with relatives, with the government. Did you all pay your taxes this last week? Remember the IRS? Okay. We begin to ball it up, and sometimes it's easy to either just get so discouraged we just want to throw in the towel, or we blame our wife. Men, this is typical. Or everybody, we blame God. Why me, Lord? Why now? What's going on? Sort of like we're not in shape, we're not conditioned, we're not a professional fighter, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in the ring facing Mike Tyson, whose goal in life as a fighter is to pound you into the canvas and destroy you so you cannot move and he can win. And the bell sounds and you look around and there's nothing but ropes all around you and you can't get out. That's the way life is sometimes, and that was the way life was for Moses. And we're in our exposition of Exodus, we're beginning at the end of chapter 4, verse 24, and then into chapter 5 of the book of Exodus. And we're going to look at five rounds in the boxing ring that Moses faced, that all of us face, dealing with discouraging times, dealing with troubles that happen in life where things just don't go the way we think they should go. The first area came because Moses was disobedient. And because he had not done what God had told him to do, he was in serious trouble. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 24, Moses is leaving Midian. He's going back to Egypt for the first time in 40 years. He's taking his wife and his son and heading back there to Egypt to deliver God's message to let the people of Israel go. But he'd forgotten himself personally to obey God. And in verse 24 it says, at a lodging place on the way to Egypt, Yahweh met Moses and sought to put him to death. That's kind of cryptic. We don't know all that's going on here. But God had called him to do this, and in this mysterious circumstance, Moses is struck down and he is dying. You say, well, doesn't it tell you what he had and how God was killing him? No. That's really not important. What's important here is to recognize that Moses hadn't done what God had expected him to do. He is supposed to go and tell Pharaoh that the children of Israel were God's covenant people. They were his chosen people, his firstborn son. And remember the message we ended with last week? Let my firstborn go, or I will kill your firstborn. God said that was the message. And here Moses is going back. He had not circumcised his own son. He had not shown that his own son was part of the Jewish covenant people. We're not told why, but he obviously didn't think this was a serious matter. And so here God's saying, you go and do this, and here Moses himself is not practicing what he preaches. Now, you've all heard that phrase, right? Practice what you preach. And Moses is going to go there and declare these truths. So his wife Zipporah, Moses is bedridden and dying. We don't know what's happening to him. She took a flint knife, cut off the son's foreskin. This is verses 25 and 26 of chapter 4, and threw it on Moses' feet, saying, you're a bridegroom of blood. And then it simply says, thus God let him alone. He recovered. Again, we don't have all the details. If I were making a movie, this would be a cool place, right? I'll talk to Steven Spielberg and see what he wants to put in there. But for some unrecorded reason, Moses had failed to carry out the most basic command that said to his son that the baby on the eighth day is to be circumcised. And then that is a demonstration that they are a Jew, a child of the covenant, forever. And now he's too sick and dying. He can't even do it. His wife has to do it for him. Someone said that maybe his wife was the reason that he hadn't done that. Maybe she was offended by that. Well, you know, you can read anything you'd like and preach anything you'd like on that. All I know is that she did what he should have done. And God spared him because of a godly wife who was obedient to the word. I like that. That's a lesson I can learn from. Moses is deadly ill, and the only reason God spares him is because he listened to his wife. He let her take leadership in this area where it was needed, where he had failed, that he was able to grow, as it were, through her faith in obedience to the covenant, even though she had grown up in just a home. Remember, the Midianite people, her father and their family were all descendants of Abraham, not through Sarah and Isaac like the Jews, but through Keturah, Abraham's second wife, and through Midian, his son, from that marriage after Sarah had died. And so here it is, almost a TKO. We're going to keep the boxing analogy going through the message today. Almost a technical knockout. Moses is about, I mean, he's down and out before the journey begins. And God spared him. And Moses gets up and shakes his head, clears the cobwebs out, and moves on. And it's a wonderful picture here that we have of the covenant and how God wants us to obey his word, to the point where, in the case of Moses, he was willing to kill Moses if he didn't practice what he preached. Moses was disobedient. He wasn't just disobedient in the covenant. We read in the next verse, in verse 27, that he was disobedient in bringing his wife and sons to begin with. God had said, go there. I'm going to have Aaron prepared to meet you. Verse 14 back in chapter 4 said that Aaron will meet you out in the wilderness and that you'll go together and you'll do the work. And that's what God wanted. And he had taken his wife, he'd taken his family. Remember, he probably wanted to go on a Nile cruise, wanted to show him the pyramids, show him the little place on the Nile where he was born and grew up and where they'd fished him out of the river. And he said in verse 27, Yahweh said to Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses. So he went and met him at the mountain of God, at Mount Horeb or Sinai, it goes by both names, and kissed him. Moses was alone now. Moses had sent his wife and sons back to her fathers after it would take time, because Gershom, her son, now is, you know, is like 20 years old. It's not like a baby that would recover from circumcision in a day or two. We're talking about, you know, major surgery here on an adult. And so after a while, they would have to wait there and then go back to her parents in Midian and wait for Moses there. God was getting Moses in the position where he could use him, know the importance of the covenant, know to follow the commands that I've given, know to have Aaron as your partner to do the work, because you're going to have to go to Pharaoh. And if you skip ahead, we're going to stay here in Exodus 4, but if you skip ahead to Exodus 18, we read that after the Exodus, after they'd left Egypt, they'd crossed the Red Sea, they were out in the wilderness, heading to Mount Sinai with all the Jews, now not just a few, but all of the clans of Judaism. In chapter 18, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, the priest of Midian, heard what God had done for Moses and for Israel, how the Lord had brought them out of Egypt. So Jethro had taken Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her home, along with her two sons. And he says the name of the first was Gershom, and the second Eleazar. And at the end, verse 5, Moses came with, Jethro came with Moses' sons and his wife into the wilderness where they camped at the mountain of God. And so then, in the right timing, after the Exodus, after Moses and Aaron had done the work that needed to be done, Moses is reunited with his wife and his boys. So it was God's timing and God's plan that needed to be worked on here. And Moses had time then to talk to Aaron and to tell him all the details. Chapter 4 ends with, towards the end of chapter 4, verse 28. Moses told Aaron all the works of Yahweh, or the words of Yahweh, which he had sent to speak, and all the signs that he had commanded him to do. For the first time, Moses was able to talk about the burning bush and the command of God and the work that needed to be done. He was able to show Aaron the signs that he had a staff and he threw it down. It became a viperous serpent. He'd taken his hand and put it in his robe and pulled it out, and it was full of leprous sores. And then put it back in and pulled it out, and it was back to normal again. This wasn't a David Copperfield type trick. This is a miracle. And he'd taken water and poured it out, and there was blood on the ground. And he showed this to Aaron, and there was no doubt in the story. And they had this wonderful reunion, as it were. And so the disobedience, we get discouraged. I get discouraged when I don't follow God's word. It's as simple as that. I also get discouraged when I don't follow what my wife says. Okay? We're a team. There's nothing more godly and more great than having a husband and wife that's a team together. Over my nearly 50 years in pastoring, we've seen a lot of people where one spouse was saved or the other wasn't. Or one was a dedicated Christian and the other was just kind of floating along like a dead carp downstream, you know. And it's a challenge. It's a great blessing to see them working together. And so his disobedience, learned the lesson that God wants us to obey his word. Then round two, the bell rings in verse 29, and we see an unfulfilled dependence here, because Moses and Aaron left Sinai, we're in verse 29 of chapter 4, and gathered together with the elders of the people of Israel. They quickly left Mount Sinai, and I can guarantee Mount Sinai from Cairo, the delta of Egypt, is about a 200-mile bumpy bus ride, okay? It would take, if you were walking it like you do on the Camino de Santiago de Compostela, Stella, whatever, where you guys wander and walk in Spain. How many miles do you go in a day? About 15, 12, 15 miles? Yeah, okay. So 200 miles, it's going to take them about 2 weeks to get this distance here. And they're talking, they're excited. They're going to meet with the elders. A few of the old ones might remember Moses. He's been gone for 40 years. They all knew Aaron. He was a leader of the Levite tribe, the clan that was there in Israel. And so they gathered together. In verse 30, Aaron spoke the words that Yahweh had spoken to Moses. Remember, that was a plan. God would give Moses a message. He'd tell Aaron. Aaron would speak it clearly. Then Moses did the miracles in front of the people. God was using them to try and convince the Jews that this was God's plan and God's timing to do the work. I'm not big into signs. The scripture tells us in 1 Corinthians 1:22, there's two types of people in the world. The Jews desire signs. They want authenticity. They want to see. The Gentiles use wisdom. They want logic. And I am a logical kind of person. Anybody here was in my classes at Casper College when I taught logic? You know, there was no game there. You know, we taught logic. We made the students learn. We started out logic class by saying, a simple question to make them think. If you call a dog's tail a leg, then how many legs does a dog have? And, you know, people are counting on their hand, you know, how many?
Four.
You can call his tail anything you want, but he's still only got four legs. In logic class is to teach them rules. Sometimes the rules don't make sense, and sometimes it makes for a wrong answer, because if you have wrong beginning, it'll logically conclude to a wrong ending. But, you know, we had a lot of fun in that class. You know, all cows have four legs, all tables have four legs, therefore all cows are tables. Okay. And the students would raise their hands and say, do I have to know that for a test? The Jews demanded signs. Greek seek logic. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 22, hey, we preach Christ. We preach Christ crucified. It's folly to the Gentiles, the Greeks who are looking for wisdom. It's a stumbling block to the Jews who want some sort of miraculous sign. But to those who are God's elect, the ones that he's working in their heart, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God, verifying the message. And I love how verse 31 makes it look like Moses is going to win. He's in round two, and he meets with these people. All these things happen. And what does it say? Verse 31, and the people believed. Woo, this is exciting. Moses has been nearly dead out there in the wilderness. He's been working 40 years as a shepherd. 40 years earlier, the people had rejected Moses as their deliverer. But in a different time, and different heart, and different message from God, at this time, they believed. And when they heard that Yahweh, continue verse 31, when they heard that Yahweh had visited the people of Israel and that he'd seen their afflictions, they bowed their heads and worshiped. I read that and I got excited. I thought, boy, can you imagine that? They tell it all. The redemption's coming. God's going to take us out of Egypt. We're going to go to the promised land after 430 years. But what we don't see in this story is that in the next chapter, these same people aren't going to believe. They believe because they saw a sign. They believe because they heard a message they wanted to hear. Good news. You know, but they weren't really changed. As soon as trouble came, they were going to be on Moses like white on rice. I mean, they were going to be on him, and there'd be nothing to stop them. Their belief was temporary. And folks, isn't that the way we are so often? God gives us a truth, and we finally catch on to it, and we say, okay, I really believe that. But then the first thing that comes up that contradicts it or gives us difficulty or gives us trial, well, where is God anyway? The temporary belief, caught up in the excitement of the moment. They saw God, the miracles. They heard that God, I love that word, that he had visited the people. It's the word we get the word bishop or episcopal from. There, that he oversaw, that he reached in to help. That God's going to do something. Boy, that's exciting. How many of you ever walked out of church or from listening to some preacher or from reading or studying the Bible or hearing something, and you're all excited? You're saying, boy, this is fantastic. And then it kind of wears off. It's like getting a new car and then finding it doesn't start really. Have I mentioned that? It's like being in the ring and you're getting beaten every day. And you say, well, is the Lord really with me? Does he really see? I know God sees all the world, but this is pretty much the end of the world. We tell people we live in Casper, not the end of the world, but you can see it from our deck. It's the end. And kind of have to wave our hands and wonder. So Moses is excited. He hears that the people believe they worshiped. I love it. That's what he did. Remember at the burning bush where he knelt down before God and heard this message to go? Now the people are kneeling down. And he thinks, I got the people with me. I got the message from God. I might have barely made it through round two, but boy, when round three comes, I am going to knock them dead. I'm me and Pharaoh, no match. I got this taken care of. That leads us to point three. Round three, the unexpected defiance. Now we're in chapter 5 of Exodus. So after this uplifting time where everybody says, we're behind you 100%, he didn't know how far behind they were. You know, we got your back, Moses. He didn't realize it was with a knife that they were going to stab him in the back with. But he's ready to go. And verse 1 begins of chapter 5. After this, Moses and Aaron went and told Pharaoh. I love it. They went and told Pharaoh, the most powerful person on earth. It'd be like going to the White House to tell Donald Trump what he ought to do. And, you know, last time I thought about that, he doesn't listen anyway, so it wouldn't really matter. But that isn't what we're going to do. That isn't how things get done. They went and told Pharaoh, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, let my people go that they might hold a party for me out in the wilderness. I think this took tremendous courage and a whole lot of stupidity. Now, he had grown up in Pharaoh's court. Now, that Pharaoh being the father, his mother, the princess, this is her brother who is the Pharaoh. And because obviously 40 years have passed. And he grew up there. He knew what Pharaoh was like. He knew the authority that he had. And God had given him a specific message. Back in chapter 3, forgive me here, I got to get a little bit of a drink. I'll try not to fall over here. Okay. Did I ever tell you about the church that I visited in our little town in Wisconsin where I pastored, and the pastor's two daughters came to our Good News Club that Teresa had in her home after school, and they both got saved. And we didn't know that much about them, and we talked with them, and then we said, well, we need to go talk to your parents. And they said, well, we just have a mother and the woman she lives with, but you can come over. We're in the parsonage of the church and mentioned the denomination that they were part of, and this was a woman pastor. And so we went over there, and the woman said, well, we're glad you told them the Bible stories. We're glad the girls learned about God in that. And I said, you know, I haven't been in your church. I'm a pastor here for 5-6 years in this town, and I've never been in your church. And she said, well, come on in there, and no problem. You know, look on around and let the girls show you around. And so they did, and they showed us that in the pulpit, Mom kept a beverage there. Are you all familiar with Pabst Blue Ribbon? In the pulpit, so that if she was thirsty speaking. Now, my wife might think this is as bad. This is coffee, dear. I know it's a sin. I bless me, Father, I see. I'm just going to keep that here. See what you get when you're not looking. You come to church thinking, we're just going to go through a chapter of Exodus and we'll learn some truth, and you get all kinds of extra things in there. God said, chapter 3, verse 18, you and the elders of Israel should go to the king. Did he take them? No. You say, well, wait a minute. He was disobedient. He learned the lesson, and now he's disobedient again. And then in verse 18 of chapter 3, it concludes and says, tell them that Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us, and let us go 3 days into the wilderness to sacrifice. He said, please let us go 3 days. Carefully couch your words. It's not a party. Don't demand, Pharaoh, let us go. You know, be winsome in your words, Moses. Well, he didn't quite catch this. And of course, what happened then is that Pharaoh immediately said in verse 2, who is Yahweh that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I don't know Yahweh. And beyond that, I am not going to let Israel go. Pharaoh was God. Who was Yahweh? Who was the Lord? Who was this God that of the Jews? Pharaoh was a child of the sun. He sat with the gods, and an inscription in the temple, still standing today up in the in Nile, further upstream, is this inscription. I am that which was and is and shall be. No man can lift my veil and see. Does that not sound like the words of God? Pharaoh was more than a man. He considered himself a god, and everyone in Egypt agreed. Pharaoh knew all the gods of Egypt. He had no idea this Yahweh character, and refused to request. Now, I think, you know, he asked a good question. Who is Yahweh? Who is God? And if he really knew who God was, he wouldn't have defied him like this. But boy, Moses is in for a fight. Round 3 is not going well. Pharaoh, you got to let him go. No, not going to do it. So Moses comes back in verse 3 and couches his words more carefully. They said, oh, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please, see there he's using a nice word. Please let us go into 3 days' journey in the wilderness so we might sacrifice, not a feast, not a party, sacrifice to Yahweh our God, lest he fall on us with pestilence or with the sword. Moses is stepping back in the ring. He's already gotten punched hard. I mean, he was gut punched by Pharaoh. And now he's just saying, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to fight this guy and relay exactly what God commanded. A simple request. And God said to him, Pharaoh's not going to accept it. And we should make it as simple as possible so that Pharaoh can only see that he is guilty, that he is defying God, and that judgment will come legitimately. Because when you defy God, it's only by his grace that you live one more minute, that you take one more breath. The famous ball player, the Chicago White Sox, Billy Sunday, went out after the games and was drunk every night. And he went on a binge, and someone caught him and took him aside and shared the gospel message with him, and God used it, and he was gloriously converted. He went back and hung up his spikes. He quit. Just said, I'm done. I can't play another baseball game. I've got to go and tell the world this message. He was famous all over the world, and there was a famous infidel, atheist, named Robert J. Ingersoll, and he would go all over the world as well, telling people there was no God. And his famous thing was to stand there with a stopwatch, and he'd stand on a stage or on a platform, and he'd say, if there's a God, I'm going to give him 5 minutes to strike me dead. And during that 5 minutes, he'd hold up the watch, and he'd prance back and forth, and he'd straighten out his bow tie, and he'd wax his mustache, and he'd stand, go, 3 minutes, God, 1 minute, God, 30 seconds, if you're going to do it, if there's a God. And then he put down the watch and he said, I'm still here. There's no God. And Billy Sunday said, if I were God for 1 minute, all that would be left would be a bow tie and a mustache. Oh, folks, listen, it's dangerous ground. But Pharaoh, verses 4 and 5, the king of Egypt responded to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back on the job. Pharaoh added, behold, the people of the land are now many. Remember, the Egyptians were fearful. They were going to be outnumbered by the Jews. And you make them rest from their burden. Even though it was a lesser plea, Pharaoh still rejected it. He didn't want them to worship their God. He didn't want them time off from their work. He didn't want to give them 3 days off, because he knew if you just give the Jews 3 days off to go out in the wilderness with their families, in 9 months, there's going to be a whole lot more Jews. We got to keep them busy. We got to keep them working. We don't want these people, the numbers to grow. And so Pharaoh landed the old 1-2. He gut punched Moses in verse 2, and now in verse 4, he gives them the uppercut. And Pharaoh is winning the match. He's going into round 4 to beat Moses and the Jews into submission. And he's going to do it by changing the rules. It's always good when you're the king, when you're the Pharaoh. You just change the rules of the match. Leads us to round 4. We got a bell with a hammer. We could ding like that. You know, and round 4 begins. The same day, verse 6, Exodus chapter 5, verse 6. The same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their Jewish foremen, you shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks as in the past. Let them go, gather the straw for themselves. Now, unless you've made bricks, you're probably not familiar with the methodology used here. You take mud from the Nile Valley, they got plenty of mud. You throw it into a form, you put straw, twigs, roots, anything into it that is matter that will help bind it together as you knead it together with your hands, with your feet, you stomp on it, you pound it down in there, you take the form off, you let that brick harden in the sun. Okay? Down in New Mexico, when we worked with the missionaries down there on the Navajo Reservation, we made adobe the same way, mixing and kneading together the mud and the straw there, so that the decaying matter will cause humic acid, and I won't go into all the science of it, but it really does work. It makes these bricks very, very sturdy. Pharaoh is dripping with defiance of God, and he's making this unreasonable demand that they now have to go and make bricks that are going to last, but they have to do it without straw being given to them. They're going to have to take part of their workforce, maybe some of the women or kids, spread them out all over the region and pick up the stubble and all the things that are needed and haul it in so that they could do the work. Okay, no straw. But look at verse 8. Pharaoh's punching back, folks. But you may not reduce the number of bricks from which they have produced in the past, for they are idle. Therefore they cried, let us go and offer sacrifice to God. Let heavier work be laid on the men, that they may labor and pay no attention to lying words. They're going to punish Israel for what Moses and Aaron had demanded. More hours, more workload, same quota, say, he wasn't moved by the demand of Moses. He wasn't moved by the begging, the pleas, Pharaoh, of Moses. He wasn't moved by Yahweh, a God that he didn't even know. We're in trouble here. And so verse 10 continues the story. So the taskmasters and the Israeli foremen went out and said to the people, thus saith Pharaoh, and it's a repetition here, I'll not give you straw, go and get your straw yourselves wherever you can find it. Your workload will not be reduced in the least. So the people scattered throughout all the land of Egypt to gather the stubble for straw. The taskmasters demanded, complete your work, meeting your daily quota as when there was straw. It was worse now. It was worse than what they had before. Remember, they had come to Egypt. They were treated with royal respect. They were good workers. They lived, they multiplied in the safety of Egypt. God was preparing his people, not in Canaan, but in a nice area there in the certain area of Goshen in the Delta. But when Pharaoh tried to kill the babies, and now Pharaoh's son is here adding to the workload, it's going from bad to worse. A significant test for the people. Are they going to follow God? Are they going to believe that God is going to do his work? They said they believed, they worship God, but now things are becoming difficult. My son in Illinois, Lord willing, next week will be there with our missionaries there in the Chicagoland. And he said that he wanted to change the name of his church to 12-Step Baptist Church. And I said, oh, because of the so many of the people there are addicts and from prison and all sorts of ill and difficult times, because that's who he's ministering to, the down and out, people who are all in great challenges. And he said, no, he said, it's Dad. He said, remember you used to say you take one step forward and then two steps backward? He said, with these people, if they take one step forward, it's 12 steps back, and you got to start over again and work with them. And then next week it'll all fall apart and they're back there and you got to work with them and work with them. God gave him a heart to do that. He didn't give that to me. Okay, just letting you know right now, you go back 12 steps, I'll help you. I'll give you a pat on the back, real hard and maybe a little lower than the back. Get going. He just loves them, helps them where they are. This is the way the Jews are feeling. This is terrible. And their foremen, remember the Jews had kind of go-betweens, the union reps, if you want to call them, between Pharaoh and his leadership and the Jewish workers. They had Jewish foremen that were leading these different work crews. They were really caught in the middle of it. And verses 14 to 18, again, a lot of verses here, but they're just basically a repetition of what has gone on. The Israeli foremen, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten. And they were asked, why haven't you reached your quota? So they came in verse 15 and cried to Pharaoh, why do you treat your servants like this? We don't have straw given to us. And they say, make bricks. And your servants aren't the problem. The Egyptians are the problem. And Pharaoh said, no, you are. You're idle. And we've read the story here. So they beat the Jewish leaders who are whining and complaining. They beat these middlemen who wanted to negotiate less harsh terms to just go back to the way it was. Let us just be normal servants here, and we'll do what we're going to do. Folks, they didn't turn to God. They didn't, when the difficulty and the discouragement came, they turned to each other. They turned to the Egyptian bosses. They turned to Pharaoh. They turned to Moses. But they didn't turn to God. When we're discouraged, when God, when we're in that ring and, all we can see now, we can only see through one eye because, the other eye's swollen shut. And we're fighting away. Folks, it's imperative that we look at God, that we find the answers in his word and not in the way we feel or the way we see circumstances happening. Pharaoh was unsympathetic. He was cruel. It was harder because they were just lazy. That's what he said. He was getting beaten down. Do any of you remember the fight of Mike Tyson? We're using him as an illustration. Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. What happened in that fight? Does anybody remember? 15 rounds. Evander Holyfield got up that morning, and I'm sure he's wondering, what am I going to do? I got to fight this killing machine of Mike Tyson. And for 15 rounds, they are slugging it out, and Holyfield is holding his own. And Mike Tyson gets him in a clinch, and what does he do? We don't have any... Yeah. He bit a big chunk of his ear. And Holyfield, you know, goes, like this, holds up his glove, it's bleeding, chunk of his ear missing. And Tyson grabs him and bites a chunk out of the other ear. Is that right, story? Am I?
That was just the one piece watch. Who knows? Once a cannibal, always a cannibal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it tastes good, you know. Well, I don't know. I'm sure that, you know, the referee stopped action at that point, and they took Holyfield over, and they're putting ointment on his ear and a bandage on his ear. And somebody's saying, I don't remember that. Are you making that up? No, this is real. Okay, this really happened. But if you think Holyfield wondered about getting up that morning and fighting Tyson, if he was a little nervous and a little bit unsure might happen, now he was really saying, why did I get out of bed? You know, this is bad. Why did I do this? What in the world could go wrong now? Oh, just wait. Ding, ding. Round 5 is going to begin. You got to come back out and fight another round and find unequal disappointment. Boy, this gets me. That you think things are going good and you think you're happy and you see and you're encouraged, and then the bottom falls out. Verse 19. The Israeli foremen knew they were in trouble when they were told, you can't reduce your daily quota of bricks. They were beaten into submission. They came out walking from Pharaoh, saying, what in the world are we going to do? And look at verse 20. The first thing they did, they met Moses and Aaron, who were outside of Pharaoh's court waiting for them. And they said to them, Yahweh look on you and judge, because you made us stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants, and you've put a sword in their hand. Now they're going to kill us. They were unhappy, they were discouraged, and they were looking for someone to blame. And here was Moses and Aaron. Here was the people who they could blame it on. They knew God was on their side. He was watching over them. And here was Moses and Aaron upsetting the apple cart. And now, it's kind of a mixed metaphor. You made a stink in his sight. And I'm thinking, you know, that you stink in his smell, or you do something in their sight. But they mixed the metaphors. They were beaten, and so they have the right to do that, I guess. They were disillusioned, unhappy. Their officers were certain God was on their side, and that if the conditions were worse, it was because of this guy Moses. And they believed this was a result, and the counterpunch of Pharaoh was such that all the faith and excitement of the worship, remember how we ended chapter 4? It was all gone. They said they believed, but when the going got tough, my dad used to always say, when the going gets tough, the tough go fishing. That was his motto. Get the boat, leave, goodbye. So the Jews complained to the foreman. The foreman complained to Pharaoh. They all complained to Moses. And Moses has no one to complain to except God. Verse 22. Moses turned to Yahweh and said, Oh Lord. Not O Yahweh, by the way, that's Lord, lowercase L-O-R-D, like master. Why have you done this evil to your people? Why did you ever send me here? Moses was right. God was allowing it. God was doing a work. And the people didn't see it, and Moses didn't see it. God was toughening them. God was saying, hey, this is just round 5. We're going 15. You're going to head out to the Red Sea. You're going to head out to the wilderness where there's no water. You're going to head out to the desert where there's no food. You're going to head out. You got more rounds coming. That's like two more sermons, folks. It's exciting. We'll use the boxing analogy. I'll try to get all the stories right. God designed this. He knew that it was not good for him to just say, okay, I'll change Pharaoh's heart. He'll let y'all go. And they'll just go wandering off up towards Palestine, and they'll be beaten, defeated by the armies up there of the kingdom of Mari, the Amorites, and the others that were living in the land at that time. They needed to grow and have a transition from people who were slaves to people who are free. You can't give people a slave mentality, just give them a bunch of stuff and say, okay, now you got it all. They don't appreciate it. They don't understand it. They don't know what's going on. G. Campbell Morgan said, happy is the man when he can't understand divine movement or doubts that it really is God who is doing it. Those who face men need to learn, thus saith the Lord. The old fears are crashing down on Moses. Remember, he said, I can't do it. Who am I, Lord? I'm not your servant. I'm just a common guy. I'm 80 years old. I'm in middle age now. I can't do it. I don't want to face that. He's probably wishing he was back watching sheep in the wilderness of Midian. But God uses adversity to train us day by day by day until we get to heaven. That's what life is. It's a growing, learning, maturing. And the way our faith grows is to have it tested. Moses said, why, Lord? Why are you doing this? Then he concludes chapter 5, verse 23. For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's done evil to the people, and you've not kept your word. You've not delivered your people like you promised. Moses says, Here I am. I'm being beaten. I'm down on the canvas. I got half an ear gone. I'm a mess. And Pharaoh's kicking sand in my face. Okay, I'm mixing metaphors from the boxing ring there, but you know what I'm saying. If I were God, I could answer Moses and explain to him and say, hey, there's a bigger issue here than just freeing the people from slavery. They need to be transformed and taught how to live and serve me. And Egypt has to be judged and punished for what they're doing. So give it some time. It'll all work out for Israel's good and my glory. But Moses, like all of us, wanted the easy way. Pharaoh, let the people go. Okay, you ready? We'll go. We want the easy answer. We want the simple solution. We don't necessarily want God's will, because God's will often involves suffering, troubles, failed plans, the death of a vision, discouragement on so many levels. I suppose I can end with one more illustration here. In 1946, Al Couture and Ralph Walton were fighting for the championship. And they walked out in the middle of the ring, and, you know, they've been given the instructions, and the referee, you know, the bell rings for round one. He's got them out there, and, you know, they touch gloves like that. They touch gloves, and Couture took his glove back and punched straight into the nose. Okay, this is a half a second into round one. Straight into the nose, broke the nose, drove it up into the sinus cavities, knocked the guy unconscious in his own blood. The referee counted him out. The championship fight lasted 10 and a half seconds. Folks, that's where Moses is. He's down for the count. He's saying, oh, I remember Mom. In her broken Egyptian, I could remember her speaking to me, saying, you know, well, when things are bad, cheer up, things could be worse. And Moses said, so I cheered up, and sure enough, things got worse. And here I am, nothing's going the way I saw it. Moses was disobedient. He was defiant. He was demanding. He was disappointed. He was shell-shocked. Didn't want to get back into the ring. And God had a bigger plan. I'm sure God whispered in Moses' ear, "Okay, you're doing just fine. Just hang back there on the ropes. Do a little rope-a-dope. Okay. Float like a butterfly. Sting like a bee. Just, I'm working at it, folks. Just sit back and watch what I'm going to do. The real fight is just going to begin." Because God says in verse 1 of chapter 6, now we're not going to be there for a couple of weeks. It'll be our Mother's Day message. Maybe I won't use the boxing illustrations in that message. It'll be, God says, okay, you're down, you're out, you can't do anything, you're losing, you're done, throw in the towel. Hang on, I'm going to fight. Watch my hand. And we know, some of us were around, I went to different schools with Pharaoh, he's going to bring judgment like the world had never seen. God was going to do something. The fight is just beginning when we get to the point where we say, I can't do it anymore, Lord. That's exactly where God wants us to be.